It really is a pleasure to welcome for her inaugural shiur on Torah Motion, Shira Satch, who, as you heard, is teaching at Midrashat Torah Vavoda in Yerushalayim, also doing an MA in Holocaust Studies at University of Haifa, originally from
Tiflis.
Ola Chadasha. So it's a pleasure to bring her back. And okay, get started. Bakasha.
Okay. Thank you so much, Rabbi Kelman. I also just wanted to say that I actually have a familial connection to Torah in Motion. My uncle is Elliot Malamit, Dr. Elliot Malamit. So,
I did not know that. Okay.
I'm very connected, and I'm excited to be here to share
Thank
some
you.
Torah with you all.
Okay.
So, how do the source sheets work here? What is the?
You can share your screen, and I'll put it in the chat box.
Okay. Amazing. Sounds good. 1 second. Okay. Does everybody see? Okay. Great.
You want to make it slightly bigger, wider? That would
probably be a little helpful.
Okay. Yeah.
Okay. So first of all, thank you all for coming. I know that in America, the 10:45 slot is kind of random, but I think also in Israel, it's pretty random as well. People are still coming back from work. So it's very impressive that people are here and continuing to learn. And apparently a lot of you have been here all day, which is really, really incredible, that you're coming to learn, for the Yamim Noraim. So kol hakavod to you guys. So tonight is in Israel. I wanted to discuss, it's actually interesting that, Malka Simkevich spoke about sort of the history of emotions and atonement and everything, because I sort of wanted to look at how we are supposed to feel on Rosh Hashanah halachically. And it's actually really interesting how it all comes about. If you actually take a look at source number 3, 4, 5, and 6, we're going to take a look at those. You'll see that it's actually very confusing, what exactly we are meant to feel on Rosh Hashanah. And you might be wondering, what does that mean? What are you meant to feel? Halachically, we're not necessarily supposed to feel anything, really. You're allowed to feel whatever you want. However, you see that the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch, both comment very much so on how exactly you are supposed to feel on Rosh Hashanah. So the Torah starts in Hilchot Rosh Hashanah Siman Tav Kav Peh Bet. He quotes Rav Chai Gaon from the times of the Gaonim, right before the Rishonim's times, and he says, "V'katav Rav Chai she'ein minhag lomar moedim l'simcha chagim ozmanim l'sason ela et yom hazikaron hazeh zichron shrua." So what Rav Chai says is that during Musaf, you are not supposed to say Moadin l'simcha chagim ozmanim l'sason, meaning you're not supposed to say that you're happy because it's a holiday, but rather you're supposed to say at Yom Hazikaron Hazeh, the day of commemoration of memory, Zichron Trua, remembering the Trua, and we're going to talk a lot about the Trua pretty soon. But what the Torah is essentially saying here is that we are not necessarily supposed to be happy when we're praying on Rosh Hashanah. And the Shulchan Aruch also takes this down, and he says, Eino Omer Moadin L'Simcha Chagim Ozmanim L'Sason. But then what's interesting, is that we see that ultimately it seems that the Torah is very clear. We're not supposed to be happy on Rosh Hashanah. However, the Torah says a seemingly contradictory thing a little bit later in his writings. And what he says is, "V'ochlin v'shotin usmechim ve'ein lehitanot bo'klal." You should eat and drink and be merry, and you should not fast at all. So what the Torah is saying is that you should be happy on Rosh Hashanah. So we see this interesting dichotomy already within the Torah that we're not supposed to be saying Moadim l'simcha, chagim uzmanim l'sason, but yet we're supposed to be happy. We're supposed to be merry on Rosh Hashanah. And the Shulchan Aruch actually clarifies that a little bit. And he says, Amnam lo yaklu kol sva'am, leman lo yakulu rosham, v'tiya yirat Hashem al p'neihem, that you're not supposed to eat in order to be satisfied, in order to not mess with your head, because you're supposed to have this fear of God on you. So he does make clear that you're not supposed to be too happy, but at the end of the day, the Torah is saying that you are supposed to be happy. And what's interesting about this whole thing is that this whole concept of being happy on Rosh Hashanah versus not being happy on Rosh Hashanah has been something that I have personally been dealing with since I was a young girl, actually, because as a young child, and I don't know if anybody else experienced this, but going to shul, it can be very, very somber. You see people davening with the most kavana you've ever seen. You definitely don't necessarily see that on a weekday necessarily. But you see on Rosh Hashanah, everybody is really taking in everything they can. And oftentimes, I don't know how it is in your shuls, but, in my shul growing up, the women's section was always very, very cold. And we would always have to wear sweaters and everything. So it felt a little bit like Siberia in there. Like we were really like praying to Hashem that he should forgive us just to get out of the coldness a little bit. And simultaneously, I do remember as a young child, there was one Rosh Hashanah where I was crying. I don't remember the reason why. And my dad told me, Sarah, you need to stop crying, because Rosh Hashanah is a happy day. So essentially what is confusing about this whole thing is that we are praying to God and we're asking God to forgive us. But at the same time, the Torah seems to imply that you should be happy on Rosh Hashanah, that there is some element of happiness. So it's sort of confusing what exactly we are meant to feel. And I guess just to concretize this a little bit more, just think about how you feel on Sukkot, where it's literally a mitzvah to be happy. And you sort of feel it in the air a little bit, especially in Israel. You definitely feel it in the air. But I think also like when you're going to shul or even when you're shaking the lulav or just sitting in the sukkah, you feel this happiness. Whereas on, I guess, the opposite extreme, Tisha B'Av, you're feeling a little bit of the Siberia moment of just feeling mourning and sadness and grief over just all of the different destructions that have taken place. Now, Rosh Hashanah is not necessarily mourning over destructions. That's definitely true. It's more sort of reflecting on what you've done wrong, but it is sort of an element of mourning of like your past self in a way. So again, it's confusing within halacha what exactly we are meant to feel. And it gets even more confusing because the Rush actually says that you are actually, he quotes an opinion that you are actually supposed to say Mo'adim L'Simcha Chagim L'Zmanim L'Sason. So you were supposed to add within Musaf this idea of happiness, that we are celebrating a Yom Tov. And he brings two proofs to this. He brings a proof from Masechet Sukkah, which I'm not going to go into at the moment because it's going to go away from the shir, deter from the shir a little bit. But another big proof that he brings is from Sefer. Well, he says Sefer Ezra, but it's actually in Sefer Nehemiah. And what he brings is a whole story, just for the people that don't know this background, how basically the people come back to Eretz Yisrael after a long time being in Galut. And Ezra and Nehemiah bring all of the people together. And then we see that B'nai Yisrael, they start crying. They just don't know what to do because they just don't recognize anything that is going on, and they don't remember anything. And this time of year happens to be the Yom Echad L'Chodesh Hashvi'i, as you see in Source 7, that it's the first day of the seventh month, which is Rosh Hashanah. So what Nehemiah and Ezra say is they say, if you take a look at Pasuk Yod, it's weird that it's not bolded. I have it bolded on my sword sheet, but it's supposed to be bolded. It says, "Vayomer lahem lechu echlu mishmanim v'shatu mamtakim v'shalchu manot le'ein nachon lo ki kodesh hayom adoninu v'al te'atzvu ki chedvat Hashem hi me'uschem." That essentially what they're saying is, go and eat foods and eat and drink drinks and just eat and be happy because you should not be sad because the joy of Hashem is your strength. So we see again this idea that on Rosh Hashanah, seemingly according to Ezra and Nehemiah, you are meant to be happy. And that's exactly what the Rush seems to be saying, that you are supposed to be happy. And the Rush is actually the main person, the main Rishon amongst all of these people, that constantly, he has a whole writing on this. This is just a short snippet of it. But he writes that you are meant to be happy on Rosh Hashanah. However, it still is confusing because, again, if you look at the day, yes, you have a seudah and you eat and everything, but you still are praying to Hashem to save you for the next year, and you're asking Hashem for forgiveness. So it seems a little bit strange that we do have this simcha, but simultaneously it seems a little bit strange that we have both, that, like, what are we supposed to do with that? So if this was not a 30-minute shiur, I would ask you guys what you think is this whole the reasoning behind this whole dichotomy. But we don't have time, but feel free to write in the chat because I would love to hear. What I'm going to do for the next few minutes that we have together is we're going to look at three different case studies of different minhagim that we do, or just concepts that we experience on Rosh Hashanah, and see how they are viewed, and see if maybe we can glean from that just whether we're supposed to be happy or we're supposed to be more sad, or just not sad, more serious, I guess you would say. I remember last year I gave this year and I kept saying the word sad, and then they're like, no, you're not sad, you're serious. So yeah, I'm doing teshuva for that. So there you go. So if you take a look at case study number one, we're first going to view, the shofar. So the shofar, if you take a look at sources one and two, these are the sources for, when Rosh Hashanah comes in the Torah. And I think that Rabbi Kelman gave a shiur on this before, about Rosh Hashanah and the Torah. And essentially it comes in two places. It comes in Parshat Emor and Parshat Pinchas. And both of them, use this idea of trua. In Parshat Emor, it says the word zichron trua, a remembrance of the trua. And in Parshat Pinchas, it says yom trua, a day of the trua. So this year is not about Yom versus Zichron, like remembrance versus day, but that's also a very interesting question. But right now we are going to look at what exactly Trua is supposed to mean in the Torah. So if you take a look, we're going to flip back to source 9. So there are a few places in the Torah that use the word Trua, and one of them is in Sefanya. And this is actually talking about galut and destruction and just really sad things. And that's exactly what Sefanya is doing here. He's saying, V'haya v'yom ahu ne'um Hashem, kol sa'aka mishar hadagim v'yilala min ha'mishne v'shever gadol me'hagva'ot. That, and it shall come to pass on that day that there should be a sound of cry from the fish gate, and a wail, a yilala, from the second gate, and a great destruction from the hills. So you see that I underline the word shever here, because we know that the shofar, when it's blown, we have tekiya, shvarim, and trua. So we see that the word shever, shvarim, here means destruction. However, what exactly does trua mean here? We actually don't really know. There's not like really a set translation. You can look at JPS, but that's not necessarily the translation. But you get the idea. If you take a look at Pasuk Tet Zayin in source 9, Yom Shofar V'Trua Al Ha'arim HaBitzirov V'Al HaPinot HaGvohot, that there's a day of shofar and trua against the fortified cities and against the high towers. So what we're sort of getting here from context clues is that the word trua implies war, and it implies destruction. So it seems that the word trua is implying that we're supposed to be woken up and get ready for, I guess, some sort of war. So that seems to be, according to Sefanya, what the shofar is representing. And we see a similar idea in Parsha Baalotcha, where it's talking about war as well, and it says that more explicitly. That if you go to war in your land against an adversary that oppresses you, you shall blow a trua with the trumpets and be remembered before Hashem, and therefore you will be saved from your enemies. So it's actually interesting here because. Wait, did you have a question? Keep going. Okay. So what this is actually saying here is that we are blowing a trua, in order to be saved from war. So it's a little it's a little bit more positive, but it's still like this scary, ominous feeling. And we sort of hear that a lot. The Rambam actually talks about it in Hilchot Teshuva that the shofar is blown in order to wake us up, in order to do teshuva, and that element is very similar here. However, what's interesting here, and this is going to be important a little bit later, where it says, "V'yom simchatem u'modechem u'roshecha shechem v'tekhatem b'chatzotzrot alo lotechem v'yalzit peish lemechem." That on the days of rejoicing, on the days of festivals, you actually blow a tekiah with the chatzotzrot. So again, we see a huge dichotomy with regard to the shofar. We see that tekiah imply on days of happiness, and truas imply more war-like sensibilities. However, it actually gets even more confusing because a trua only doesn't represent war-like sensibilities. It also represents friendship. And if you take a look, Rabbi Elazar HaKalir, he was a famous poet. He actually wrote a lot of the keynote, we say on Tisha B'Av. I think that's his biggest claim to fame. But he's famous for a lot of different poems. And he wrote a lot of piyutim, a lot of poems for the Amida, for Rosh Hashanah, and all the other holidays. And some shuls say it, some shuls don't. But yeah. So essentially, what, Rabbi Elazar HaKolir says is he brings this poem and he says, he has ascended in judgment, na lev adin alot betrua. He has ascended in judgment to be exalted through the trua. Geim darea le ro'eha. Causing the valley and its inhabitants to be shattered. B'shofar avatenu u'bevarech kriya, b'meginot ra'im b'gano atorareha. That with a shofar I will appease him, and with bended knee, through the shield of the beloved in his garden, I will be befriended. So, what this is showing is that the language of trua means friendship. So where is Rabbi Elazar HaKalir getting this from? So he's actually getting it from Bilam's bracha, to Bnei Yisrael. Well, he had three brachot to Bnei Yisrael that were switched from curses. And in one of the brachot that he gives, he says, Hashem Elokav Imo Utruat Melech Bo. So what does Utruat Melech Bo mean? What does the trua of our king mean? So Rashi says on that, Lashon Chiba Ureyu, that it's an expression denoting love and friendship. So again, we see this weird thing with the shofar. Of trua meaning two different things, meaning war and friendship, and tekiah meaning rejoicing. And we see that shvarim also means destruction. So this is going to come up. This is going to be very important, very soon. So we see that there's an interesting dichotomy, and we still don't really have an answer as to what exactly we're supposed to do on Rosh Hashanah and how we are supposed to really, really feel. So I'm actually, just due to time, this is actually like a very long shir because I did a lot of research on this last year. So we also, I'm just going to quickly summarize case studies 2 and 3, but definitely look at the sources on your own. They're really powerful sources. But the second case study is about halal and how on Rosh Hashanah, the Gemara in Masechet Erechin says that you're not supposed to say halal in Rosh Hashanah because it is Yom Hadin, and why would we be, Hashem is opening up Sifrei Chaim and Sifrei Metzim, the book of life and the book of death, so why would we be saying joyous songs? So the Rambam actually brings this down, and he says that he uses this interesting phrase of that these days are Yemei Teshuva, V'yira U'pachad, V'lo Yemei Simcha Yetera, that there are days of awe and fear and not days of extra celebration. So the Rambam uses this weird phrase of like, extra happiness, which again, we don't really know what that means. It's not really giving us an answer of how happy are we supposed to be? How sad are we supposed to be? Like, it's just a very confusing situation. And then if you take a look at the Sefer Mikrai Kodesh by Harav Svi Pesach Frank, he quotes the Brisker Rav, who he asks a question. Why do we say halal on Rosh Hashanah? Why don't we say halal on Rosh Hashanah? But why do we say Shir Shel Yom, like the daily song that we say at the end of davening? So he says the same type of idea that you are supposed to not say halal because you're not supposed to have simcha shlema, so complete simcha, which again is very confusing language. But on Rosh Hashanah, But on with regard to Shir Shel Yom, you don't necessarily have to have that. So that's why you say it. So we see with regard to Halal that we have this new element of not complete happiness. But still, it's still confusing what exactly that means, because that could have a lot of different parameters. So then case study number three goes into the element of teshuva. And it's actually interesting. Rav Lichtenstein, in his book on the Yamim Noraim, he actually has an essay called The Joy of Teshuva. And he tries to go through, maybe trying to find how joyful Teshuva might be. And he has a lot of trouble with it. And all he finds is sources like the Rambam, who says that we're really just crying out to Hashem. We're crying and entreating. And we're meek and everything. We're meek of spirit. And he also brings in Rabbeinu Yonah, who says that the third principle of teshuva is grief, that we should be sad about it. But Rav Lichtenstein does find one more source. He brings in the Midrash Tehillim, where he brings in the pasuk Ivdu ad Hashem v'simcha, serving, you should serve Hashem with happiness. And he brings in the idea by Rabbi Avo, who says, that when you stand in prayer, your heart should be glad, for you are serving the Most High God. That when you are praying to Hashem, you're going to end up being happy somehow. But again, throughout these three case studies, it's still very confusing, because we see with Shofar, we see that there's war and happiness and friendship and a lot of different things going on and what we're supposed to feel. And with regard to Halal as well, we're not supposed to say Halal, but it's because we're not supposed to have Simcha Yetira or Simcha Shlema, whatever that is, whatever total complete happiness is. And then with regard to Teshuvah, it mostly sounds very mournful, actually, that we're supposed to like really become these low people, in order to really entreat to Hashem. But the Midrash Tehillim seems to say that eventually we'll become happy out of it. So what does all of this mean? So let's take a quick look, at what this could potentially mean. And this idea was based off of Rav Lichtenstein vaguely. However, I also brought in a lot of my own, twist on it. So let's take a look at a time where somebody in Tanakh was happy, by doing teshuva, and it's very, very strange why he's so happy. So that person is David HaMelech. And if you take a look at source 19, you see that David HaMelech, after he sinned with Bathsheba, he writes a perek of Tehillim. And what he says is, L'menatzeach mizmor leDavid. He says, for the leader, a psalm, a praise of David. And then the next pasuk literally says, Bevoe love Natan Hanavi kasher ba el Bathsheba. That when Natan Hanavi came to him after he had sinned with Bathsheba. So the question is, how on earth is David saying praise to Hashem after he was blamed for probably doing one of the most embarrassing, terrible things? So how did David HaMelech reach this point? So Rav Tzedek HaKohen asks the same question. And the way that he answers this question is he actually gives the metaphor of the shofar. So going back to our tzkiya shvarim trua, that tzkiya meant rejoicing, shvarim meant destruction, and trua meant either like being saved from war or friendship with Hashem. So what Rav Tzedek HaKohen says is that these three blowings of the shofar all represent the journey that we take on Rosh Hashanah. That the tzikiyot, represent the happiness. The shvarim represent us finding that self-reflection and sort of destroying ourselves a little bit and feeling very shameful. And the trua ultimately helps us realize that we are human beings and Hashem is going to forgive us because he is friends with us and he will save us, because of how much we've grown from this Rosh Hashanah. So we see that through these elements of tzikiyah, shvarim, trua, this is what we experience. And he goes on and says that this is represented also through the noises of Tkiyat Shofar. I actually heard Rav Meidan earlier this week, And he was talking about the 100 kolod and how we got there. And he kept imitating all the different sounds. And I was thinking, oh, should I do this in my shir? And then I realized that's probably a mistake because it was already like, wow, Ramadan is very brave. So that was funny. So essentially what's going on with Rav Tzedek HaKohen is that he is saying that we are experiencing a journey on Rosh Hashanah. That sort of happens simultaneously. And Rav Lichtenstein actually points this out really beautifully. He says that, he quotes Rav Tzedek HaKohen, and that's actually where I got it from originally. And he says that the grief and the joy that we feel on Rosh Hashanah are simultaneous. However, we aren't supposed to necessarily allow the grief to overtake us. And Rav Soloveitchik actually talks about this, there's this book by Arnold Lustiger. I believe he's from Edison, New Jersey. That's what I found out yesterday when I was giving the shiur yesterday. And he says, he quotes different shiurim by Rav Soloveitchik. And what Rav Soloveitchik says is something very powerful. He says that at the end of the day, we do feel grief and we do also feel a lot of fear. Like the shofar denotes fear. However, he says that pachad, fear, on Rosh Hashanah is not meant to leave the Jew permanently paralyzed. This powerful and ultimately destructive emotion must be transformed into a mobilizing constructive force during the days leading up to Yom Kippur. And he says that it's sort of a process, that Rosh Hashanah is a process that's supposed to make us a little bit fearful, but also joyous that we're beginning this new relationship with Hashem. And it also brings sort of compassion in that sense, that we're being sort of more kind to ourselves, that we're realizing, wait a second, I'm growing through a lot this year, and I'm going to become a renewed person because of what I'm experiencing on Rosh Hashanah. And I just want to end with the idea that this is not meant to be done on our own. And I think that that's what the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch were trying to do. That the Torah is saying that we're not supposed to say Mo'adim l'simcha chagim uzmanim l'sason during davening. We're not supposed to be so happy during davening, because davening on Rosh Hashanah is a moment of reflection. It's supposed to be us feeling a little bit fearful and a little bit paralyzed, I guess you would say, but not permanently paralyzed, as Rav Soloveitchik says. And we're supposed to feel a little bit sad as well and take it more seriously. However, once we finish that long davening on Rosh Hashanah, we go and have a meal, either with our family, with our friends, and we sort of reflect together. And that brings happiness in a way, because in order to really reflect and in order to really process these sort of negative emotions, you need to do it together. And I just brought this source that, like, on Rosh Hashanah, we all come together. Hashem is all judging us like B'nai Maron. And this is a very scary thing, but it's also comforting in a way that we're all being judged. And then at the end, I brought in Rav Kook, who says he really brings in this idea that teshuva comes from the depths. I'm not going to read the Hebrew because Rav Kook's very confusing and it's 6:14 already. So teshuva comes from the depths, from a great depth in regard to which the individual human spirit is not a self-contained entity, but a continuum of the great universal being. That at the end of the day, we are not meant to do Rosh Hashanah on our own. It's supposed to be scary. It's supposed to actually bring about some emotions that aren't so pleasant all the time, because we're really, really reflecting. However, we are doing it as a Jewish people and we are doing it together. So I think that that's really what, first of all, the Torah and the Shulchan Aruch is trying to bring, and what we're really, really meant to feel on Rosh Hashanah as a whole. So thank you all so much. I'm sorry that it's already 6:15 and we don't necessarily have so much time for questions. But yeah, thank you so much.